The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 916. It's the 6th of November, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion, that's VRS, and Neil discusses their trading update and oversubscribed £2.9 million fundraise. Plus, I also have David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, and David discusses today's acquisition and gives a general business update. I also have Malky, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about Echo Energy, President Energy, Amerisa Resources, Rehoboth Resources, and Far Limited. And also, financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about the following companies who will be doing updates this week, and they are Associated British Foods, ABF, Marks & Spencer, MKS, and Sainsbury's, SBRY. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Versarion, as VRS. Neil, thanks for coming on.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's been a busy weekend for you, and because I'll just take people over the story. In fact, we'll get the story, but you know, there's people joining the story all the time, Neil, and some people may not be up with the story, so can you give a brief summary as to what Versarion is all about, please?
Sure, we're a materials company primarily involved in coming up with the next generation of materials for applications with big global companies that are going to create products for the future. So we've got two graphene spin-outs out of the University of Manchester and University of Cambridge, and we're successfully commercialising that technology.
Okay, well, let's go back to Friday. Friday afternoon, market close. There was a trading update, a notice of results, RNS. Then literally a few minutes after that, there was a fundraising of approximately 1.2 million. So first of all, let's deal with this in chronological order if we can. So I thought the trading update was very positive, but can you go through some of it if you could, Neil?
Yes, certainly. So we're seeing strong performance from all of our group companies. In particular, Total Carbide has announced recent aerospace industries is diversifying away from its oil and gas, but oil and gas is starting to come back as well. Our plastics company, AAC Kyroma, is having a good time, and that's bedding into the group well. And obviously, we've had very, very strong interest on our graphene businesses with major players. And so, yeah, really positive across the whole group.
Yeah. And so you chose to, via primary bid, and people said, why are they doing this after market close? And that's the way primary bid does it, because it's open to private investors. So obviously, it helps when the market is closed. So then, because people get wind of a fundraise, which is always pretty much always a discount of fundraise, it'll affect the share price. So that's the way it's done. But the surprising thing was, it closed. I tweeted out, oh, look, private investors get involved here on primary bid. The surprising thing was, within what, literally 10, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, it was closed and oversubscribed. And so was that? I thought at the moment there'd be a mistake on the website, but that was supposed to happen. It wasn't supposed to happen, but it happened, didn't it?
Yeah, we'd anticipated that the offer would be open all over the weekend, and literally within 15 minutes we were able to close the thing down because we had such strong demand. Two factors. Firstly, very, very good support from our institutional investors, both through our broker, WH Ireland, and also through primary bid. But, you know, we needed to keep the door open for our private investors. We believe that everybody should have a fair opportunity. And if we'd have gone for the 1.2 million, we'd have had to have scaled back both our private investors, and we wouldn't have enabled any of our private investors in. Mm-hmm. So we made a promise to our investors that we would allow them the same opportunities that our institutional investors get. And so we had no option really but to take a significantly more placing than we'd anticipated. I mean, yeah, it's great news for everybody, to be honest. It gives the company a huge opportunity now to not only get on with the scale-up that it needs to get on with, but to also support me and drive even more opportunities.
Yeah, so it went from 1.2 to 2.9 million, which obviously underlines the demand there for shares. So, exactly. So what are you going to do with these funds then, Neil?
The 2.9 million obviously enables us to review our plans now. Chris Lee, our CFO, is always very, very good at managing money. He never lets us get away with anything. He's always challenging us, and this just enables us to bring in some extra resources, as opposed to looking at 10 or 12 real key blue chip opportunities. We can look at more because I'll be able to support the team with some more resource. And we have been pushing it a little bit. We've got a lot of pressure on the guys. You know, we're very, very conservative with cash, as been reported, and therefore this will just enable us to be able to expand the team, support me, buy the capital equipment that's required to enable these big collaborations, and to give us more options.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned in your RNS also will help you sort of scale up the production of Nanine to approximately a factor of 10. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So strong demand. My issue and the single biggest risk as a CEO at the moment is not being able to capitalize on some of these opportunities. And to be honest, if we got one or two, we'd be under huge amounts of pressure. So, you know, we've got a number of these underway at the moment. They're all in advanced stages of negotiation. We're finalizing the last details, and that gives me some issues in terms of not only the number of guys we've got, but also the amount of capital equipment we've got at our disposal. Yeah. And so we're ready to go, and it means it's all good news.
Yeah, and I suppose, is that the issue at the moment? I mean, is the ability to produce, you know, graphene at a decent quality and quantity is the issue, is it?
Yeah, so far one of the big issues with graphene is that people haven't been able to have access to it either in the right quantities, the right commercial scale, or in the right quantity. And we can solve all of those problems with this capital equipment, and that's why the placing was so important. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have done it unless we absolutely needed to do it. As I say, I'm the largest shareholder. We don't like to see dilution, but we also like to be fair, and we need to make sure that the business is making the right choices. And in this particular case, we believe that buying capital equipment and really scaling up the graphene production is the thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got the cash. What are we next likely to hear from you, Neil?
We're working as hard as we can, including over the weekend, on just finalizing the details of these collaborations. These are transformational events for the business. The transformational for graphene, to be honest. And the business has always been very lucky that it's had huge amounts of support from Innovate and the rest of the government agencies. And now we're starting to deliver on all of those promises we made. Mm-hmm. It's a truly fantastic time for us. You know, it's hard to get to sleep at night, to be honest.
Yeah. And if all goes to plan, I mean, would you expect to have some news before Christmas or after Christmas? What kind of time period?
Always difficult to say that, Justin, because it's slightly out of our control. We're waiting for other people to sign bits of paper, but I think everybody's going to have a fantastic Christmas, let's put it that way.
Excellent. And that's maybe that's it. Maybe you should put more graphene in toys. Neil, it's good to chat.
Well, the batteries definitely need to last longer, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes,
so,
exactly. Well, that's one of the areas why I'm in. You know, I like sort of the space you're in, because I look at traditional sort of commodities, and you know, you've got copper, nickel, lithium, all that, but also then you've got graphene, which you know, can change so many different sectors. But Neil, if anyone's listening right now and they're not following you, not following the story, and obviously the stock has dipped a little bit today because of the fundraise, and they want to get involved in some way, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
The three reasons that I'm highly supportive of this share as the largest shareholder and also the CEO is we're poised to become world leaders in this particular technology. I feel that all the stars are aligning, and we're starting to deliver on a lot of those promises. It's a hugely exciting sector to be involved in, and is an enabling technology for things like electric vehicles and lighter planes and all of the growth areas, including batteries, as we mentioned before. And thirdly, there isn't a person or a company or an organization that has the connections and the contacts that we have with the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge, who are very active supporters of our company.
Mm-hmm. And just to put the picture, if you're not aware of where graphene came from, it was invented at the University of Manchester. What year was that, Neil?
2005, it was isolated by a couple of Russian professors who picked up the Nobel Prize for Physics. And it's the very quickly becoming the capital of graphene in the world.
Yeah, and that's obviously why that connection is so significant. Morris, Neil, thanks for that. And hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Justin. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack All. That's UJO ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Not at all. Thank you. Thanks for asking. Great to be talking to you.
You're very busy at the moment. Another bit of news out today, and we'll cover that in a bit, the acquisition. But before we get into the news, David, the detail on that and the decision to go ahead with acquisition, tell us, for people listening right now and they're new to the podcast or have not heard of your company, summarise what you're all about, please, David.
Yes, of course, delighted. Union Jack is a junior oil company, and we take interest between 7.5% 20% of various projects onshore UK. We're not operators. We take interest of very late stage and even production, as this latest acquisition is today. Our aim is to make a profit at the end of the day. It takes a lot of time, but we're slowly getting there, which is the main thing. We've got two wells to be drilled in the near future, Biscuit and Homewood. We've done two small production deals. Well, I say small, this one today is very good for us, and Kennington could be anything, who knows. And we look forward to a lot of news flow in the future.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw this RNS today, I was a bit confused because it's acquisition of interest in Fiskerton Airfield. I thought, an airfield? Really? and then obviously I read the thing. But take us through the details here, please, David.
Yeah, of course. Fiskerton Airfield, it was discovered, I think, in about 1997. When it first came on stream, it was doing 1,000 barrels a day. It suffered from lack of investment over the last few years. Like these wells, they need attention. Mm-hmm. They're like family in a way, where if you don't spend any money, things start going south. And that's what really happened with this well over the years. Production fell, no investment. We've had this project on our radar screen for about 18 months, but the cost has always been what we consider to be too expensive. But Egdon have done a good deal and very good of it. They've shared it with us, which is terrific. So as I say, we've always liked this project, and I'm delighted to be part of it, actually. And we've been out there a few times and always wished we could have it by hook or crook, and here we are. We're great. We're right on the radar screen now, and it's in production. We're going to do some work. We're going to do a few workovers. We're going to pay for some seismic, and who knows what that might unveil. So no, we're really, really pleased. And again, it's a production deal. There's no planning scenarios to scupper things in the short term. We're really pleased for this one.
Yeah, do you know what? That's the trait of a very good investor, is when you've done your research on something, on an asset or something you want to invest in, but you feel the price is a bit too steep. So you wait. Now, the average or bad investor will buy straight away regardless of price. But I like the way you just sat and waited and make sense. The price obviously come to you and you've gone for it and made the decision to get in there. And so that must be quite satisfying to get, you know, something you've been looking at for a while at a decent price. Is that right?
It really is, as I said earlier. We're delighted, and we. This is how Union Jack operate. We've got a really, really good team. It's a small board. We've got Ray Godson on the financials, Joe Farrell, myself, corporate, and Graham Ball, who's a great technician and geologist. And we look at these projects in house first of all. We take advice from Graham Ball. We then go to SB Angel, who've got a great gas team. I have to say that oil and gas team. And they do their internal valuation of the project as well. 9 times out of 10, their valuation is the same as ours. But it's good to have that backup, because you know that you're probably not wrong. You know, I see over the years, I've seen loads and loads of deals, and you look at them and say, God, why did they pay all that for that situation here? So we always do, but there's a lot of due diligence that goes on in the background. I like to think that we don't buy assets that are not going to let us down in the future. Exploration, you never know. Mm-hmm. But we like to think we've at least got a chance, and we do have a lot of backroom support, for want of a better word, of SP Angel.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, our other brokers, Turner Pope.
Yeah. So, exactly. So, what's next on this then, David?
Straighten the field and do some work to bring a production up.
Okay.
Like Egdon believe they can get this up to 30, 40 barrels a day, pretty sharpish. And dependent on the results of the seismic, which we'll know in H1 next year, could be anything. Might be doing some infill drilling. Who knows? But at least it's a nice little addition to us.
Mm-hmm.
As when you add this to the Keddington production, of course, the jewel in our crown is the actual appeal on Wrestle. When that happens, 75 barrels a day will be compared to all the other stuff we have as well. Join it all up together, talking 100 barrels a day. Look what we've got, the oil price, $62. Marvellous, great.
Yeah.
You can work that out yourself. Our costs for the year are only $500,000, and we intend to keep it at that. There's no great big pay rises in view, or we take very little out of the company. The majority of that, our funds, which we've got quite a lot of money left in the bank now to do as we want to do, you know, this works for us.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention, you mentioned it there, the Wrestle planning decision. What is that going ahead, this appeal?
That is tomorrow, and I'm actually just packing my suitcase now to go up for the up to lovely sunny Scunthorpe for the rest of the week, and probably some of the week after as well. So fingers crossed, it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, well, hopefully now they'll start to see some sense, David. I think, you know, we should see a positive outcome. But like I said, fingers crossed.
You have to be confident, otherwise you wouldn't be in this game.
Yeah.
That was always it's part of the scene now. You know, the planning. Eventually, you get there.
Well, you know, I've chatted to other people have an interest in this as well. I mean, Upland Resources, Steve from there, and they said they've answered pretty much everything they need to, and so legally, you know, it seems like it should go ahead, but obviously you've got to...
Legally, yes. Everything, you know, without going too deep into what has obviously gone legal now, but everything needed to satisfy has been given to the council. The environmental agency have given their blessing, health and safety have given their blessing, and even the planning officer twice has given his blessing on the behalf of his department. So you have to try to show and say, well, what else have we got to do?
So people listening to this now, David, will think, well, hang on, everyone's given their blessing, so who's standing in the way of this?
Well, it's the actual council, maybe,
okay.
The planning committee.
Yeah.
They make a decision. Eight members of the council, the local council, they form part of a planning committee. The recommendation from the planning of their own planning officer on two occasions has been rubber stamp recommend that this goes ahead. Unfortunately, the committee has said no on two occasions.
Yeah. And so when, how long is this expected to last?
The hearing will go on all week,
mm-hmm.
starts tomorrow, and part of next week as well.
Okay.
And then the directorate will go away and he'll give his opinion and say, well, in 4 days' time I'm going to make a decision on how long this is going to take. So it's, hopefully by the turn of the year we should know. But I think you get the feel for these things anyway.
Yeah.
So you see how things are going. Although you can't be a mind reader, and you know, we're confident the legal team have done a terrific job, and it's down now to what the directorate says. You know, this isn't a council decision or anything like that. This is effectively legal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, fingers crossed. And in the meantime, David, if someone's listening right now and likes what you're doing here and likes your strategy but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, first of all, as I always say, this oil exploration and development is always high risk. However, the risk rewards, as always, are pretty good, as in the case of Union Jack. So the three reasons I would say, if you feel like taking a risk, is we do as we say, the board, we strive to do as we say. There's going to be lots of news flow over the remaining part of this year, what's left of it, and next year as well. with wells to be drilled, appeals, maybe another acquisition. But at the moment, we've got a lot of business to get done and work in the field along with our partners. And most importantly, we've got cash to do as we say we're going to do at the moment, to drill the wells. We're funded on our drilling programme. Mm-hmm. So that's my three reasons.
Excellent, David. Well, listen, have a good week, and hopefully we'll get some positive news out from that appeal. And if we do, no doubt you'll be back on the podcast to chat about it. So thanks for that, and hopefully speak soon, David.
You bet. Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now on a frosty Monday morn, it's Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. All right, Malky?
I'm extremely well, thank you very much, Justin, and yourself?
Yeah, well, do you know what? I like the fact that you say you're extremely well, sort of positive mental attitude, but I can hear you've got some kind of cold going on there, Malky, soldier, yeah?
Yeah, I'm a soldier, yeah. I've got a cold, but it's only a cold, and I'm sure we'll carry on. It's been a busy few days, and I've got a very busy week, so I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, crack on. What's the first stock you want to chat about?
Well, I want to talk about Echo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk about, I'll run through them one at a time. Echo Energy, which announced last week, I mentioned it in the podcast last week because it had been suspended,
mm-hmm.
and we were waiting to see what was going to happen. And as expected, the day after the podcast had announced that it was entering into Argentina,
mm-hmm.
With a farming agreement covering in four assets with CGC. And then that gives them a highly respected local partner. It gives them a chance to become a big leading player in Latin American gas as a producer, explorer, appraiser. They've just got a decent package. They've got a bit of initial production. They've got a bit of appraisal, and they've got quite a lot of upside in the deal. So that gives them a chance to grow from there. So that's very positive.
And is this living up to some of the hype, you think, Marky?
Oh, I think so. This is a proper deal. It's a very big deal, mm-hmm. for the size of the company, but it'll certainly be their massive, major asset, I suspect, going forward.
Yeah.
They're not putting very much money up front, which is good. The consideration is spread across all four assets, and in terms of what they're doing, they'll be carrying part of the work program starting in the first quarter of this year. I expect this will be their sort of go-to asset for the time being. I think that as you look at it, it's got everything you want. As I said, it's got a bit of production to keep you going, get a bit of money in, mm-hmm. appraisal, which should bring in production from workover wells and that sort of stuff, and exploration as well. So,
Okay, cool. What's next, Malky?
Well, I mentioned President recently as well, and there's a lot going on, and this is Latin America, and this is Argentina as well, funnily enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in Argentina. The majors are coming in big time to the Vaca Muerta unconventional play. And, for example, last deal the President did was to take some conventional bits and pieces off Chevron, which looked absolutely fantastic. But President announced last week a significant upgrade to their prospective resources in their historic Pesto Guardian, Mataras and Oculta licenses, which are all owned 100% by President. So I think that's very positive indeed. And I think that they'll farm out the two of the Mataras and Oculta licenses a bit of a lump of it, because they've got 100%, and this will mean that they can fast track it. So somebody's probably come in, carry them for their share, and increase production. So things are going really well at President at the moment. They've just had a complete change in the last few months, and I've been mentioning them because they did a placing a couple of weeks ago. And at one stage, the open offer last week, the price, which is 10p, they were below the open offer price, which I noticed that now they're 10¾p, which is above the price. So, it was ludicrous that they should be below that price. So investors are clearly working out that the shares are worth a lot more than 10p.
Yeah, well, at the moment, they're up again today, 2.3% to 11p. So,
all right.
I'm assuming that the price of oil going up isn't hurting them either.
no, it doesn't do them any harm at all. They're producing oil on a daily basis, and there's very good value. It's profitable. You know, it's very. They're in a very strong position, and the guy who runs it, Peter Levine, is determined to make proper money for his shareholders.
Okay, all right. So it's, for anyone searching for President Energy, it's PPC ticker. Anything else, Malky?
Quick word on Emerisur, which are their monthly data out today. People have been a little concerned over the last few months that they're not producing quite as much as they should be. But the average production the last month was just over 6,000 barrels a day, with peak at just 7,400 barrels a day. More importantly, going through the ABA, that's the pipeline to Ecuador, that's peaked at over 8,000 barrels a day for the first time, which is extremely encouraging. Their year-end target is 7,000 barrels a day. I'm sure they're going to actually cruise through that. Longer term, things are very positive on that company, and I would remain very positive.
Yeah, do you know what? I do like the chart there. I mean, it's one of those things that's forming what's called a bit of a wedge, and it's an upper range, keeps banging its head on the 200-day moving average. And if it clears that, it should start to motor. But, I mean, literally, it's got a tighter and tighter range as we go in. So it's going to go one way, either up or down. But, like I said, if you think it's positive, then it's going to go up and it's going to move. So
I do, and I think the CEO has been buying stock in the market for cash with his own money in the last few weeks.
Okay, so
I love that.
Yeah, that says a lot, doesn't it? So, all right, anything else there, Marky?
Well, I don't know whether you've... I mentioned it a couple of times, but I don't know whether you've seen this thing called Rehbold Resources at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of chat about it on social media. I've not done that. I've briefly glanced over the RNS of the first asset, Corallian, I think it was Energy or something.
Yeah.
But I'm not really versed on it. So, what do you know about it?
Well, I'm very positive on this. I mean, it's early, very very early days, but I have told my blog readers to put it on their radar screens because I hear some very exciting things. I mean, these are two guys who used to be fund managers in the oil and gas sector for M&G. They've set up this business. As you say, last week they made their first acquisition of 34.5% of a company called Corallian Energy. Now, Corallian Energy has this thing called the Coulter Appraisal Project, which is adjacent to the Witch Farm onshore oil field in Dorset. My spies tell me that look could be fantastic. It's scheduled to drill a well, an appraisal well, next spring. If that goes strongly, I'll remain very positive on that. And I think that there's another deal in imminent. I wouldn't be at all surprised if in my next two podcasts, so I wasn't telling you about another deal.
Oh, wow. Maybe that's it there.
That could be. I'll have to wait.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think that I'm sort of very much of the view that, you know, there's going to be something else on the go here. And it's one to watch because I think they'll be doing a lot of deals.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It has been, I mean, every day on the podcast, I cover the top five most followed companies, and it has featured in that top five quite a lot of late.
Yeah.
So obviously, people are catching on or reading your blog. So, yeah, it's definitely getting interest. Excellent. Is that it, Malky?
One quick one.
Go on.
One very quick one. I've got. I've talked about FAR Limited, which is Australian quoted.
Yeah.
But it's in the Senegal play with Cairn. Mm-hmm. Just two very quick things to say about it. First of all, I met with the managing director when I was in Africa, and the news on the Gambia is very exciting. They've got 80% of what is a huge potential play, and I suspect they'll farm that out potentially to somebody quite big. More importantly, I know it's not in the market, but my spies are definitely telling me that Cairn are going to sell between 30% of their 40% stake in Senegal. Now, as I would expect, Cairn have denied it, and they would do. But I think that if that happens and FAR are involved in any such way, the shares have been absolutely dead. They've done nothing for ages. They're properly financed. They're in good condition. They've got a decent. They've got 15% of what I think is nearly a 2 billion barrel find in Senegal. When Cairn, and I think they will, when they sell that all or part of that stake, that'll frank the value of FAR in a big way. I'd expect the shares to triple on that news, and that doesn't include the potential huge upside from the Gambia.
Yeah, okay, so FARDS, and if you just search for that, I think it does come up in one of the top
searches. It's FAR.au, I think.
Yeah, FAR.au, yeah, let's say. So I'll put a link to it anyway on the blog. So marvellous stuff, Malky, good to chat to you.
Okay.
Speak next week, fella.
Thank you very much indeed, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Conor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You all right, fella?
Very good, thank you.
Yes, you're not joining in the queue for the iPhone 10, are you?
No, I'm not.
Well, what is wrong with those people? I never, ever understand that. I can never get that kind of, enthusiasm for a phone that you can get sent to you pretty much in a couple of weeks anyway. Why do people in the queue? I just think, do you know what? Those people there in the queue, it's almost like pretty much the saddest people in the world. we've got them all in one place. Let's all round them up and lock them up. Yeah, they're all in one place in these queues. Ideal. I just don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think these people have something wrong with their heads. fundamental issue. But I suppose, it makes me feel a bit normal, I suppose, which is not a bad thing. So while Conor, you come on every week and we look at the bigger stocks that essentially are reporting this week, what are you looking at? Who's first?
We've got Associated British Foods on Tuesday, sort of a bit of a British classics week this week, really. Obviously owns Primark. It's been doing very well, given the retail sector and the retail landscape as a whole. Like, I think it hit 18-month highs in mid-October, and that's after it saw a pretty sharp fall in September after its latest statement. But his figures, the company is massively benefited from the weakened sterling. Yeah. Like, for example, its half year figures in April, I think it saw a 19% surge in revenue to 7.3 billion. I think that was maybe something like 7 million at a constant currency rate. Pre-tax profit was up 35% to 624 million, which is huge. I think that the currency movement, really captured in its third quarter results in July. So I think group revenue rose at 10% at a constant currency rate, but 20% at actual exchange rates, which is, that's a very, very big difference. A statement in September, as I said, sort of sparked a bit of a sharp fall, mainly because the company has said that in 2018 its sort of full year margins would be the same as it had been in like the fiscal 2017, which was a bit of a worry given that they'd sort of steadily been falling across the year, and I think it did stall somewhat in the second half of the year. However, it did say that adjusted operating profit for the group will be well ahead of what it was in 2016, and that Primark's share of the UK market has risen significantly, which I think the company itself highlighted that in a time of falling consumer spending, something like Primark is likely going to benefit just because of how much cheaper it is compared to its peers, really. Mm-hmm. Like, if people are going to, if people need to buy clothes, people might start gravitating a bit more towards Primark because, if they haven't got as much money to spend. In terms of Primark itself, total full-year sales are up 13%. I think that is mainly due to new store openings and stuff like that, because like-for-likes were only up 1%. But again, in the current retail landscape, rising like-for-like sales at all is very good. Mm-hmm. So I think investors on Tuesday, it's full-year results. I think investors will be expecting big things, not only because of how high its stock has climbed, but due to that promise in September that profits will be, substantially higher than last year. So that maybe slight pitfall for Associated British Foods if it doesn't match those expectations. But it does seem to be doing very well. It's also benefited from its sugar division, which is the other big sector, I guess, beyond Primark. I think it struggled in 2016, but really has turned itself around this year, and that's what helped its half year pre-tax profit figures back in April. It was like a huge jump in sugar profits.
Yeah, well, do you know what? They really did. I mean, Primark, other retailers, clothes retailers, really did a double take and changed their strategies when people realised you could produce clothes that cheaply and they were half decent, And it changed the industry a bit, didn't it? And you've had other people compete now with them, so I suppose I've caught up a little bit. But I've always found it a bit odd. People always said, why didn't they just spin that out? Because, it's lots of different parts of the business and that may be held back by the rest of it, So, very surprised it hasn't been spun out. But, they did have a big drop-off back in September, didn't they? But it's recovered since, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's all recovered. It began to recover immediately, really. Yeah. Part of it probably was it had also climbed quite high by that point in September. Mm-hmm. So, cool. Picking up on the slightest negativities, really.
Yeah. What's next, fella?
Marks and Spencer, so sort of, you know, similar realm to Associated British Foods, not doing anywhere near as well, obviously. It's been actually on a bit of a roller coaster this year, but at the end of May it was at 12 month highs, and then by the end of August it plunged all the way to 13 month intraday low. They really, we'll see with Sainsbury's in a second as well. June was horrible for retail. We've seen it, you know, so many retailers really struggled over June and then much of the summer. I think that's exactly what happened to Marks and Spencer. Mm-hmm. In terms of its figures, full year figures back in May weren't great. It sort of had a restructuring charges hit, 63.5% drop in pre-tax profit, which is obviously horrible. Mm-hmm. Clothing division, like for likes, they were down 3.4% for the year and a really bad 5.9% in the fourth quarter, which was a really swift reversal of the sort of the surprise 2.3% like-for-like growth the clothing division had seen in the third quarter. For the food business, also disappointed. Its comparable sales were down 0.8%. You know, given that that's meant to be the healthier half of the business, that was a disappointment. First quarter in July, things were a bit better. Still not great, but they had improved. Like the clothing and home like-for-likes were down 1.2%, which is obviously a big improvement on a 5.9% drop in Q4. Total sales were up 2.7% to 2.5 billion. The food division again was a bit disappointing. I think like-for-likes were only down 0.1%, but they would have been down substantially more if Easter hadn't fallen when it did. So again, that's cause for concern, given that, like I said, the food division is meant to be where Marks and Spencer's is at its best. In terms of its half-year figures on Wednesday, I think investors will want to see that slowdown in like-for-likes in the clothing division continued in the second quarter. You know, obviously, ideally, that it would post something positive, but I think investors will be happy enough with like a 1% drop in like-for-likes, really. And in terms of the food division, obviously, again, ideally, it will return to growth. I think that anything, you know, that isn't positive with the food division, I think, will be seen as a disappointment. Also, major news, I guess, in mid-October was that Marks and Spencer's head of that clothing and home division, Jo Jenkins, sort of all of a sudden left. I think she'd only been in the job a few months. Obviously, that's not a great situation to be in heading into Christmas. Obviously, I imagine Marks and Spencer's is the kind of shop that books their clothing lines fairly far in advance. So I imagine it has the Christmas line sorted, but it's still not great that it now doesn't have a leader for its most struggling sector. It's only like a fortnight since Jenkins left, but I think investors will want some kind of update on any potential timeline of appointing her successor, I think.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I'm looking at the chart here, and it's essentially, it's like a heart rate monitor that's been attached to a patient you're not sure is going to make it or not, you know? So literally for the last 12, 18 months, it's been going, you know, in a steady rate, doo, doo, doo. You're thinking, is it going to go anywhere? Is it going to go anywhere? You know, it's stable. Let's say that. At the moment, it's stable, but that's it.
Isn't too bad. Like, stability in the current retail climate isn't that bad.
Yeah, but having said that, it's stable at £3.30-ish, whereas, like, you know, in 2014-15, it was, like, up at £5 odd. So, it's, you know, it's stable at the lower end of an historical price range. So, you're thinking, is it all priced in, pretty much, you know? Okay, what else? We got Sainsbury's, is it?
Yeah, finally ended on Sainsbury's. Again, it's half-year figures on Thursday. Hasn't had a great year. It was sort of chugging along, I think, between like 255, 270 for the first like five or so months of the year. Spiked towards 280 towards the end of May. Since then, however, again, awful June, pretty bad July, not great in August. Slumped across those 3 months. Picked up a bit in September, sort of towards mid-October, and then has again fallen away and is now, you know, sitting just at what, around 236 or something. Again, figures not great in May. Pre-tax profit fell 8.2%. I think a lot of that was related to the purchase of Argos, but it's still not a good figure. Total sales were up 12.7%, which is a really huge jump. But again, those figures massaged by the sort of the robust performance from Argos, because I think like for likes were still down 0.6%, which admittedly was an improvement on the 0.9% drop the year before, but still not great. I think the killer really in May Interestingly, it rose across most of May, but around the 3rd and 4th of May, when it released its full-year figures, it saw like a 7.5% drop in the 48 hours after the results were released. I think that was mainly because CEO Mike Coupe sort of warned on falling consumer confidence, the drop in real wages, and again labelled the supermarket sector sort of the most challenging in the world, which arguably is true, but isn't what investors really want to hear from the CEO. First year figures in July, really, really positive. It didn't really cause much movement on its chart. I think it was sort of caught up in the wider retail gloom. But like-for-like sales were up 2.3%, but excluding petrol were up 2.3%, which was its best performance in 4 years. And it's a really healthy rise. I think it benefited from sort of hotter weather and stuff like that. Total sales were also up 2.7%. Clothing division was really strong after a bit of a wobble in the full year. I think clothing sales were up 7.2%. Again, investors are going to want to see that continuation, over the entire first half of the year and, you know, through into the second quarter. They're going to ideally want to see those positive like-for-likes repeat in the second quarter. But obviously, the situation has only become trickier since the start of July, with, you know, some fairly ugly retail sales figures coming out in September and October as, you know, inflation continues to rise, food inflation continues to rise, and real wages continue to fall. So it'll be interesting to see if Sainsbury's can eke out anything positive on Thursday. Again, I guess Morrison's managed it. They managed a 2.5% rise in like-for-like sales. But I think Morrison's, again, Morrison's was in a bit more trouble than Sainsbury's was. So his comparable figures, I imagine, were a bit better than Sainsbury's could perhaps manage it. And Morrison's has consistently done well over the last, I guess, 8 quarters or something, basically since David Potts took over, where Sainsbury's has had a few major wobbles in the last, you know, year or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you know what? I did look at the chart there, Sainsbury's, and I thought I hadn't changed it over from Marks and Spencer. They're very similar charts. Both have come down from historical highs and the lows and bumping along the bottom there, but we'll see. Thanks for that, Connor, and have a nice week. We'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, talk next week. Thanks.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At 5, Jangada Mines, JAN. I wrote a blog about them on the weekend. I think you should do a read-up on them. At the moment, they're progressing through milestones very quickly, and there's still a sort of sub-10 million market cap, but the potential they have for the project they have, it's an NPV, net present value, that project, of 158 million. So it's about 13 times their market cap, and they're heading towards a significant milestone, which is feasibility study. Okay, at 4, Angus Energy. Nice update today with ANGS. At 3, Greatland Gold, GGP. At 2, Cogen Power, CGP. And at number 1, most followed company was, I had the guest on today, the CEO of Vesarion. That's VRS. I never knew it was Vesarion or Vesarion. And Neil says Vesarion, I think, when I say Vesarion. Obviously, I'm incorrect. Because he's the boss of that company. All right, top 5 most liked RNSs from these companies. At 4, Metal Tiger, MTR, share issue. At 4, Ortac Resources. Going to be chatting with those guys there very soon. Proposed acquisition of Casa Mining Limited. At 3, Vesarion, VRS, successful fundraising of 2.9 million. At 2, Angus Energy, ANGS, Lindsay X2 operations update. And number 1, is from Greatland Gold, GGP, acquisition of Black Hills Gold Project. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.